I would say that real estate industry is very like man dominated still.
Still, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that still now sometimes. And yeah, personally, I don't really have a worst experience, but I hear some women real estate agents saying like, yeah, I was treated really badly because I'm a woman. And they kind of like, usually the Japanese businessmen, like the other real estate agents, they kind of like look down on them as a woman real estate agents.
It's kind of
And
ridiculous because, to be honest, maybe that's only the foreigner aspect of things, but hands down, I'd say 90% of the agents that we work with, the women are so much more professional, speak better English, have more capabilities when it comes to finding creative solutions. It's the men are the ones we struggle with, to be honest. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, this is the first in a series of interviews that I've decided to have recently with a bunch of real estate agents that we're partnered with in various areas all around Japan. I wanted to get their opinions, their feedback on their local stomping grounds, whether that's Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, Sapporo, or anywhere else in the country. What they can tell us about their cities, their property prices, foreign interests, locations that might be more or less popular, more or less known, maybe some local hidden gems and tips that not everyone knows about, and also current news and trends, particularly with the current anti-foreigner political climate and the war in the Middle East, the new business manager visa criteria, and so on. So this first conversation is with Mika Auslander, our favorite Tokyo agent, although she does work nationwide these days, and actually doing more deals outside of Tokyo, and she'll explain why in a moment as well. And so we cover her personal background, professional history, her career journey to date, and what it's like working as a nationwide covering freelance real estate agent in Japan. We talk about the industry here, what it's like to be a Japanese woman in this sector, what it's like to work with international buyers, and all of the little cultural differences in negotiation tactics and various other purchase procedures, what foreign buyers and local sellers or realtors don't really get about each other, and how she bridges that gap, and Japan's constant and stubborn fear of foreigners. Then we drill down to her home turf, Tokyo and surrounds. We talk price and location dynamics, the subtle and not so subtle differences between Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Yokohama, and Kawasaki, and why it's worth using a professional for your first purchase at the very least, and maybe for subsequent purchases as well. Enjoy the chat, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so welcome. It's great. It's great to have you here talking to me. It's been a while since we spoke publicly. I think we had you at one of our JREP sessions a while back, like right 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we were talking
yeah,
about
thank you for
rentals
having
at the
me.
Time. Oh, pleasure, pleasure. I think just to give people a brief intro,
Of the bilingual foreigner-friendly agents that I personally work with, you're the one that I've been working with the longest time. And honestly, you're also one of the most capable and most flexible agents that I work with. I really enjoy working with you. And I know that a lot of other foreigners who are active in this space have been working with you recently for the same reason, because you're just really amazing, not just flexible and professional, but also a real pleasure to work with personally. So could you briefly introduce yourself and tell people that are listening a little bit about your obviously your name, but also your history, what you've been doing, how you got into this field, and how you've progressed over the years?
First of all, thank you so much for your kind words. It really made me happy just
It's all true.
now. My name is Mika Osander, and I am Japanese. And I was born in Nagasaki in Japan, and I went to Canada to study English for a year and a half, and then I came back. I started real estate in 2020. Yeah, 2020. So it's been 6 years. And when we first spoke, I was doing mainly rentals. I think it was probably 5 years or 5 years and a half ago. And I started doing more sales after a year. And yeah, it was really busy. It's getting a little bit slower, but it's still pretty active, I would say. Yeah.
Well, we'll get into the details in a minute, but you started out working as an employee in a company, and then you set out on your own and became a
Oh,
freelancer,
yeah.
right?
I am a freelancer now as a real estate agent, and I started freelancing in 2024. So it's been a year and a half almost.
What's been your experience? I'm asking because I know from my partner and life partner and business partner, Chikako-san, when we started, which was about 15 years ago now, it was a little bit less common to see women as freelancers in this field, right? It was a lot of old school, middle-aged slash elderly men in suits and ties, and I mean, we did run across women working in various real estate companies, but to see them actually embarking on their own and setting up their own business and acting as a freelancer and getting the respect and distinction from the customers and the partners that they work with was a lot more rare. Have you felt this changing over your 5, 6 years?
I think so. I think when I started working as a professional, it was probably getting a little more common for women to be independent and have a career. But I would say that real estate industry is very like man dominated still.
Still, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that still now sometimes. And yeah, personally, I don't really have a worst experience, but I hear some women real estate agents saying like, yeah, I was treated really badly because I'm a woman. And they kind of like, usually the Japanese businessmen, like the other real estate agents, they kind of like look down on them as a woman real estate agents.
It's kind of
And
ridiculous because, to be honest, maybe that's only the foreigner aspect of things, but hands down, I'd say 90% of the agents that we work with, the women are so much more professional, speak better English, have more capabilities when it comes to finding creative solutions. It's the men are the ones we struggle with, to be honest.
when I was working in a company, real estate company, honestly, there were so many women than the men. So I think I was in a lucky position. I have been in a lucky position. And now as a real estate, freelance real estate agent, I still go through a company to sign a contract, a big real estate firm, and they have a lot of like independent agents. and oh, sorry, freelance agents, and
Yep.
they, many of them are women. So,
Yep. So it's
yeah,
definitely changed, hasn't it?
I think, I feel, yeah, it's changed. Yeah, I
Yep.
see more
And
women.
to clarify, the company that you're working with now, they are not your employers. They just provide you with the resources and the infra, like a franchise sort of an infrastructure support sort of organization, right? Yeah.
And we share a commission.
And you have a network of colleagues that you can refer to. Actually, let's talk about that for a moment. So you're based in Tokyo, but one of the things that I like best about working with you is that I'm able to give you any client with any requirement, looking for anything anywhere in the country, and you will either be doing the work yourself physically if it's, geographically feasible, or you will find a colleague or a partner or somebody who can do the legwork in whatever corner of the country it is, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I
And the
have.
network that you work with enables you to do more of that because there's a lot of colleagues that you can reach out to, right?
Yeah. So this company hires everywhere in Japan.
You
So,
can mention them, give them flowers. We're not shy to mention
oh, yeah, I work
them.
with Terrace, the real estate company. And yeah, they only hire freelance real estate agents as, yeah. And they are like nationwide. So there is Tokyo office, Osaka, Yokohama, and also Fukuoka, and I think Tohoku as well, and Hokkaido. So whenever I ask the Terrace people, I can usually find people anywhere in Japan. So whenever someone wants to view any like some properties in Fukuoka, for example, I find an agent and I join on Zoom and I translate so they can communicate and ask questions in both Japanese English. So yeah, it's
So
pretty convenient.
you're still spearheading, leading the deal, but you can utilize other colleagues and partners to help you with physical stuff in other locations, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Webdisk Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top of the list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today. So you're not, I know that in the work that I do with you, it's nationwide in all kinds of property, but aside from what we do together, do you have any specialized locations or specialized types of properties that you do more of?
Yeah, locations, I'm not really specific. If it's like in my area, it's I have not more knowledge. But other areas, I still study about other areas. So I wouldn't say I'm like very specific about areas, but many clients are looking in Niigata and also Kansai area. That's probably the two major areas. And I would say I'm mostly specialized in like Akiyas and yeah, vacant homes and sometimes investment properties. And I'm not really doing rentals anymore these days, but maybe like to help my friends or something like that. Yeah. And I also don't really do property management and tax management anymore. Yeah.
So you're focused on purchase and you also help people sell properties if they need them sold, right?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, so in the context of our work together, we obviously work 100% with foreigners, whether they live in Japan or out of Japan, but they usually don't have the language skills or the expertise, or they just don't have the time to deal with stuff on their own in front of more traditional real estate agents. So within this pool of clients of buyers, can you lay out some client profiles? Like you mentioned, Akiya and Nagano, I'm assuming that's people looking for cheap holiday homes mostly.
Yeah, usually cheap holiday homes and sometimes not cheap. Yeah, but I would say I don't know if I'm answering the question correctly, but most of my clients, I would say 80% are Americans and Australians, and probably 10% Europeans. And maybe 10% others.
Do you have a lot from Hong Kong, Singapore? I know that's a lot of our clientele. Not that many.
Not really. Yeah, I have one Singaporean client, but not Hong Kong.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you seen, so looking at you mentioned things are getting slower and we're feeling it as well, and a lot of the agents that we work with also have mentioned that. In my opinion, that's been the case since the latest, well, two things happened last year. First off, we got a new government, and that their rhetoric is a bit more, let's say, unfriendly to foreigners. And also one of the things that happened even before they came in, but definitely they've leaned into that, is they've changed the requirements for the business manager visas. So a lot of the people who had a dream, and a lot of them actually managed to pull it off, of buying a cheap holiday home somewhere in the countryside, turning it into an Airbnb, and then leveraging that to get a visa to stay in Japan, they've kind of gone away from our perspective. The dip that you're sensing, I mean, I know it's still busy, but it's definitely not as busy as it was last year. This dip that you're sensing, is that related to these things as well? Are there other factors? Are your clients telling you why they're delaying their purchase or rethinking it? Or do you have any further insights on that?
Yeah, so definitely the business manager visa thing is affecting, and I actually see some cases like some clients bought properties, but and they were planning to do their business here, but they just found out that the requirement got very like strict, so they had to give up on their dreams, and they now want to sell their properties. So yeah, I see a few cases of that, and I'm helping them sell their properties. And yeah, I feel like that's the biggest effect for many people. But nowadays, I also feel like because of the war that's happening, everyone's cost of living has been rising. And I feel like maybe they can still afford the place, but we don't know what's going to happen. So I feel like many people are just like putting that on hold and see what's going to happen. That's my guess. And yeah, I still have a few people like still looking for properties, but yeah, I don't really have a lot of like new inquiries.
And you've mentioned investment properties. I know that we worked on a few of those together. Are those clients any different in their approach? I don't mean the people who are going to buy and turn it into a business and run it themselves. I mean the people who are looking for more passive types of long-term or maybe monthly leases that are just buying a property to generate income. Have you noticed a change in their attitude since last year or since the war broke out or whatever's been affecting it?
Not really. I don't really do a lot of investment properties, but I have a few, and they make a living in Japan out of that. So I haven't really seen a lot of changes in them.
Okay, so the main changes you're feeling are more for people doing it for personal reasons, holiday homes or businesses that they're going to be running themselves and so forth.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so to go a bit more macro, bird's eye view, you've been at it for about 6 years now. Where do you find are the biggest points of friction? Because you're obviously bridging the gap between foreign buyers to a not very, but still quite traditional Japanese property market. What are the things that you keep running into that you have to explain either to the Japanese side or the foreigner side that comes up again and again that people just don't know or don't understand or have issues with if it's their first time dealing with a foreign buyer or their first time buying in Japan?
That's a good question. I recently came into a situation where, I mean, I think a lot of the times, but so many foreigners try to counter offer, and I'm happy to explain, but sometimes people don't get it. So it gets a little frustrating sometimes, but many people get it like after I explain. But yeah, I'm starting to think like maybe I'll have like a piece of paper explaining how it works in Japan so they can just read it. And yeah, but that's probably
But
the
what is it that they don't understand? You mean the level of negotiation that's possible?
yeah, like sometimes like when I try, I think I'm also like not really good at like saying it straightforward. So sometimes they think that, oh, like maybe I can try to put this like condition so it will be like kind of like meeting in the middle ground. But what I mean is like when the seller says no, then you should try to be the seller's expectation usually, because after all, it's like the seller's decision if they accept the offer or not. So we can't really be like strong about the offer. So I understand it's like kind of frustrating for the buyers, and it's probably the norm to like counter offer and like put more condition and like do a like multiple counter offers, but in America or like in other countries. But yeah, it's just like it's not really how it works here. And sometimes people say like, can you just like please tell them, like saying it is like free. So sometimes the clients are like a little pushy, so I get a little like kind of like conflicted, like, oh, how should I tell that to the Japanese side? Because it's not the norm. And I know like we're at, I feel like the buyer is asking a lot, but I don't want to offend them at the same time. So
I
the
think people are
balance.
not, the way it works overseas is that properties are listed at whatever the seller thinks they might be able to get away with. Like if somebody really falls in love with this property, then maybe they'll pay, I don't know, 30, 40% over market price. So I'll start advertising at 30, 40% over market price and then see what happens. And here, usually, sellers would be working with an agent like yourself that would tell them what the reasonable price is, and that's the price that they set, or maybe slightly over that. But you don't see properties here, unless the seller is living in La La Land, like pre-bubble days, and they think they can still get what they got then. But if they insist not to listen to their agent, it might happen, but it's very rare. Mostly properties are priced at maybe 10% over market price, not much beyond that, right?
So it's
And then
like
the buyers
finding.
come in and they expect that they can try to make an offer as low as they can get away with. But what happens if somebody comes in with this lowball half price offer?
Before I talk to the seller, I always tell them like, oh, this is not gonna work. This is gonna offend the seller, and we can lose, like we can risk the deal. So it's really not a good idea to offer like half price or like ridiculously low price. So I tried to tell them, and I think so far no one is like that pushy or like no, like everyone understands. So I feel very lucky with my clients. But I don't really bring that straight to the seller.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So, really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So, if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
Okay, and can you give us an example of something from the seller side where somebody who's never sold to a non-resident foreigner before, they're just not aware or not able to understand how to work with them?
Many times I'm on the buyer's side, and there is usually the seller side agent. So I only talk to the agents, but many agents have shared with me that they are a little afraid that they're like it could be like a like fraud or like something sketchy is going on. But other
Because,
things,
well, what do you mean by fraud? Like the fact that there's a foreign buyer interested in this property?
sometimes they think like are they gonna maybe like take the ownership and don't pay, or like they just like vanish sometimes, or sometimes Japanese side can be pretty like silly, like tell me silly things like that. But yeah, I always tell them like I've been doing this for like many years, and I know how to handle this type of case, so just like don't worry about it. And like they can just like treat us as like a regular buyer. But other things, Some sellers are a little worried about the neighborhood getting along with the non-resident foreigners because of their language and some culture. And also, when it's a non-resident, when the buyer is a non-resident, they are worried like, oh, maybe like the weed is gonna be like overgrown and like the neighbors are gonna be worried and stuff like that. But yeah, whenever I explain like, oh, they're gonna have like a tax manager and the tax manager will probably manage the property as well, so it's gonna be okay. Yeah, and many times it's okay. Sometimes Japanese people just saying like no foreigners. Like I don't want to deal with a foreigner. And yeah, that's really sad. But yeah, it's not like zero. It happens sometimes.
Have you felt that changing over time, either for the better or for worse?
I don't think it changed a lot.
Okay, so still the
Yeah.
same kind of atmosphere in the market.
Yeah, and like the when I'm at work, I don't really feel that. I feel like these days it's getting more like anti-foreigner like country as a country, I feel. But at like with the deal, I haven't really felt that
Okay.
a lot, yeah.
What's your so you're based in Tokyo, but you're saying you don't do a lot of work in Tokyo? I was wondering if you have any feedback specifically on the Tokyo market, Tokyo and surrounds. More foreigners interested, less foreigners interested, prices going up, prices staying the same.
Yeah, price is going up, so I don't really feel like many foreign like non-resident foreigners are interested because it's too expensive. But I think like the outside of Tokyo, it's still affordable for many people. So for example, like the cities in Tokyo, like not the 23 wards, or Kanagawa, Yokohama, Kawasaki, or Saitama. Those areas are
Kawasaki's too, really? Kawasaki? I thought Kawasaki was very similar to Tokyo.
It's pretty similar to Tokyo, but it's still less expensive. So
Okay.
when people have budget, I feel still they're interested. But it's still expensive. And yeah, other places like outside of Tokyo, maybe like 1 hour commute to central Tokyo, those areas I feel still active.
If you if because this is your home ground, Tokyo and surrounds is your the area, like you mentioned, that you know the most about. Can you name Kawasaki, Yokohama? Can you name a few other maybe smaller, less known locations around Tokyo that you think might be interesting in the sense that maybe they're gaining popularity for residential purposes, more people are moving there, places that are interesting that people might not know about that well?
The place that I'm starting to be more interested, or like so many people are interested, I feel is Chiba.
Chiba City or
And
Chiba Prefecture? Or...
Chiba Prefecture, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, Chiba City is probably pretty expensive too, but I'm not too sure about the foreigner side, but for the Japanese side, I think Chiba, some cities are trying to be like more family friendly, and they have
Okay.
like some areas that's like very like kids friendly, and it's easier for moms to take care of the kids and take them to the yochien or hoikuen, like the preschools. And yeah, I think those areas, especially like Nagareyama City, Nagareyama Station, I think specifically,
Okay.
that station is getting a lot of popularity.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think I've heard some other cities in Chiba as well.
No, more. Give us more. Not just Chiba. I mean, definitely more in Chiba if you have them, but more small towns that nobody's ever heard of. This is where the gold is, please.
Okay, so maybe this is a little more interesting for foreigners, but I think for people who want to buy like a vacation home, that could turn into an Airbnb. I think the line of Keisei line and Asakusa line, that's
Keisei
connected.
mainline, you mean the one leading to Narita Airport? Oh,
Keisei
okay, so
main
through
line.
Nippori and then all the way up to, yeah.
Yeah, I think around that area is getting also more popular. And because Keisei line is connected to Asakusa line, and that goes also to Haneda Airport and also Narita Airport, just one train. So it's
So that
very
crosses
easy.
right over from Northeast Narita Airport all the way through Tokyo Kawasaki Southwest Haneda Airport. It's basically covering going right through the entire Tokyo metropolitan area, right?
I think for many times you need to transfer once, but just the same platform. So it's like basically the one train. So yeah, I heard that it's getting more popular, and when it's like more closer to the Narita Airport, it's cheaper. It's more affordable.
And that puts you within somewhere between 30 to 60 minutes to central Tokyo, right?
I would say so.
Depending on where on that line you're. Okay. And then how about to the north and the west, Saitama, all the way down to Hachioji? Any interesting places around those areas?
I'm not too sure about Saitama. I feel like
Okay.
it's getting a little less interesting in my opinion, because like the Saitama Shintoshin area, that's already pretty expensive. So maybe around that area, maybe it's good.
Okay.
But yeah, in
So Saitama
Tokyo,
Prefecture, a little bit out of Saitama City, maybe the suburban areas between Saitama and Tokyo, kind of thing.
maybe like 30 minutes to this
Bueno,
like
right? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Saitama area. Yeah, 30 minutes this Saitama area maybe still a good option. Yeah, 'cause it's pretty big. It's a pretty big area, and there are so many things to do. But yeah, I also s saw that with a client that in Chofu City in Tokyo. It's pretty close to like the central Tokyo still, but that area is developing now. So it's also a good option, and it's getting more popular. And
But still cheaper.
I think it's getting a little more expensive these days,
Okay.
and it's getting more competitive. And it seems like there is going to be a big mall there. So yeah, I think so many people are looking to buy there as well, and it's
Chofu.
in Chofu City, and yeah, it's pretty easy access to Tokyo. And yeah, I know there is another one in Kawasaki called Saginuma Station. It's in
Okay.
Kawasaki City, right next to Yokohama, but not Yokohama Station, but Yokohama City. And that area I heard is also developing. So right
Okay, so that's
now,
the area between kind of south of Haneda but north of Yokohama Station. So the north parts of Yokohama City or the south part of Kawasaki City, right?
yeah, it's like the west side of Kawasaki.
Okay.
And next to the north side of Yokohama. Yeah,
Okay.
that area is developing. It's also one train to Shibuya. So the train is really bad, like for the commuting. It's like
How do you mean that?
along the Daientoshi line. I also live along this Daientoshi line, but it's like so popular because it goes to Shibuya, and also it goes to Otemachi, like the Tokyo Station area. So many people who work in Tokyo, they live along this line. So the rush hour train is like really packed, And you
Okay.
don't even need a handrail to support yourself
You're just
because
held
you're
by
like,
the people. Wow.
yeah. So
Okay.
the rush hour train is like really bad, but it's still getting popular. So, yeah.
So it's not convenient in the sense that it's packed, but it's convenient in the sense that it's a single train all the way to Shibuya.
Yeah. So if you're like flexible for work, then I think many people like to live it along this line.
Just avoid rush hour.
Yeah.
Okay, and speaking of Yokohama City itself, can you explain to people who have, because people are familiar with the port area, obviously, and Yokohama is Japan's second biggest city, so it's a famous location, but Yokohama City is not a single kind of suburb, right? The different areas around the city are very different to each other. Can you explain to people a little bit about what Yokohama City basic fundamentals are like?
Now, if you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out Akiya Mart. That's Akiya hyphen Mart, Mart, akiyamart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western-style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the Akiya Mart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, ZIV at checkout and get 30% off your Akiya Mart Pro annual plan at akiyamart.com.
Yeah, Yokohama City, same as Kawasaki, it's very big. And Yokohama station and Minatomirai area is located in the southern part next to the ocean. And that area is very expensive and very busy. And it's really like similar to Tokyo. But when you there, you can take, for example, 1 hour train and it's still Yokohama.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to take multiple trains to get to another Yokohama, like other areas. And yeah, for example, the line that I'm living, this Dentoshi line, there is a station in Yokohama City. And goes for a little while, but those areas tend to have like farms and yeah, those like greenery areas. Some of them are very nice and developed, but yeah, many areas you might feel like, oh, this is like a kind of like a countryside or like suburb located, but countryside vibe. Yeah, so
So
it's
that
very.
means what? That means that property prices are probably lower, but it's also harder to find tenants who want to live all the way out there, right?
Yeah, especially if it's far from the station, if you have to take a bus or something, then yeah, it could be pretty cheap, but you need, for example, you need a parking or yeah, the rent can be pretty low.
Right.
Yeah, but I
So
feel
when
like
somebody
Yokohama,
sees, sorry, go ahead.
I feel like Yokohama feels like it's still a brand. If you say like, "Oh, I live in Yokohama," I feel like that feeling is getting more popularity. So even
Okay.
if it's like farther out, I don't feel like Yokohama City is like that low rent compared to Kawasaki, I feel. Kawasaki sounds bad.
Really?
Like, yeah,
Okay.
it's really close to Tokyo. And some areas are really, really nice. I really like Kawasaki City,
Yeah.
but I think like some parts of Kawasaki City is like not safe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there are
I'm learning a
some.
lot. Please keep
Yeah.
going, because in my head, Kawasaki is closer to Tokyo. And at least
Yeah.
the properties that I've seen there tend to be quite expensive, but you're saying the Japanese image of Kawasaki is actually different.
Yeah. I personally live in Kawasaki, right next to Tokyo, but Kawasaki. But I don't really like saying, "Oh, I live in Kawasaki."
Okay.
Yeah, because this areas of Kawasaki is pretty nice, but the other part, especially around Kawasaki Station, I think that area has like a yakuza office or something. That
Okay.
and there are so many like izakayas and like night places. So those areas tend to be seen as like a like not I wouldn't say dangerous, but like unsafe
Yep.
areas. And yeah, people don't really like to say like, oh, I'm from Kawasaki, or like I live in
Right.
Kawasaki. Yeah. That's the
So
feeling for Japanese people.
these days, Yokohama is something that generates a bit of a better image in Japanese people's minds compared to Kawasaki.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, Yokohama,
Okay.
I feel, is a status.
Right.
Yeah.
And then last question. Sorry, I'll let you go in a minute, but going a little bit further south from Yokohama towards Yokosuka, where the big US military and Navy base is,
Yeah.
what's happening there from a price perspective, availability of properties? Is that considered a popular area, good investment?
Too sure about Yokosuka. I think Yokosuka Chuo
Don't be shy, we're
Station
not
of
offending anyone.
Yokosuka Chuo Station, like around like the more bigger developed areas. I think that's good area for maybe good investment even. But if you go a little bit farther, there is a lot of hills. It's like a thing in Kanagawa Prefecture. So Kawasaki and Yokohama, the same thing happens. But if you go a little farther, there are so many hills and there is a lot of mountains there. So, and Yokosuka, I feel, is pretty cheap. Maybe it's like slowly going up still because it's commutable to Tokyo.
Okay.
But I don't really feel a lot of changes over the years.
Right.
And
Well,
yeah,
the
I haven't.
population, I haven't checked the last census just released a few days ago, but the population has not been rising in Yokosuka. It's been going down, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't really been looking in Yokosuka for a while, but only sometimes I see some properties. But yeah, properties are cheap when it's like a like old properties. Yeah, I feel so many people can afford Yokosuka. And yeah, definitely so much cheaper than Yokohama and Kawasaki.
Okay. Well, sorry, I said it was the last question, but you just reminded me to ask you, what do you feel, because you have been handling rentals in the past and occasionally you handle investment properties. Do you feel it's easier to find tenants for singles, or let's say couples without children, versus families, like let's say a studio condo unit versus a single family home? As far as tenants are concerned, is it easier to place singles and couples without kids, or easier to place families? Because maybe there's a supply and demand situation too. Maybe there are more, single people, but there are also more single people apartments. I don't know. So, what are you feeling from a tenant perspective? What's easier to populate?
I feel like single people and like young couples without kids, they're a little easier to place and they're also easier to find a rental property. Yeah, than family homes, I feel. Yeah, I haven't really helped the families in the past, like for rentals. So I'm not like a completely sure, but there are definitely more like studio or like smaller units available for rent. And I feel like in Japan, at least for many people, it's like a norm to buy a property when you have a family or when you are married. So yeah, because it's like pretty, like the interest rate is rising, that's still low. in Japan. So it's not impossible to buy properties. It's getting really difficult in the central Tokyo, I think. But still like the suburb areas and maybe like closer to central, but like not in the central. I think it's still possible for many people to buy properties. So I feel like not many people invest in bigger units or properties for families.
There's not that many tenants who want that. They'll usually just go and get a mortgage and buy their own.
Yeah, that's the feeling I get still.
Okay, perfect. And right before I let you go, one final sentence, because again, you live right there on that intersection between the scary, strange foreigners and the traditional, annoying Japanese. Like, one sentence of advice for both sides, like people who have not purchased in Japan yet and coming in here for the first time, and then people who have not dealt with foreign buyers and are selling to them for the first time. Could you maybe give a bit of advice to that side and this side? What if there's one thing that you want them to keep in mind when they do it for the first time?
One thing that I want to say to them.
That's advice that'll make their life easier if they're looking to sell to a foreigner for the first time, or if they're a foreigner looking to buy here for the first time.
Okay, kind of like my motto is like, it's gonna be okay. Like, it's gonna work out in any way. Like, for example, if someone is like really worried about dealing with a foreigner, there maybe sometimes it's dangerous depending on the situation with anyone, but I think it's gonna work out somehow. Like, for example, if you just like contact me, I'll take care of it. If you like someone like me exist like anywhere. So yeah, you
Oh, you mean it's the first time for you, but it's not the first time for other people who have done it before. So, is that what you mean?
it's
I mean, it's
not
the first time for the seller, but there are people like you who have done it many times before, right?
like Asians like me. There are so many people who know this kind of stuff. So like you will find this kind of person if you just keep asking. And yeah, it's gonna be fine. And for the buyer, like for the foreigner side, yeah, there are people like you or like me or like other bilingual agents. And yeah, they know how it works. So it's somehow it'll probably be connected to those people. So I feel like it'll be okay. Just like maybe it's better if to bit better to avoid doing it yourself for the first time. Once you do it and you know how it works, maybe it's okay to do it yourself. But if you find someone, I feel it's pretty easy. Like when I handle prop like deals, I feel like they're some people are stressed out, but I feel like they're pretty relaxed and like I just tell them what to do and like they do their stuff and yeah, the deal is done. So
So you're saying don't do it yourself the first time because it's a different market to what they're used to? Like work with an expert, at least on your first deal, somebody who can teach you all of this little differences that you might not be aware of, and then learn from
like
that and do it on your own, right?
yeah, if you just meet like if you contact a property listing and if those people know how to take care of foreigners, I think that's good. But
Most of them don't, though, right?
if they don't really like usually when people don't hear from the agent, the listing agent, that means they don't know how to take care of the deal. So yeah, if that happens, I feel like yeah, you should like look for a bilingual agent or like just not the property. But
Preferably
like
Mika-san.
yeah, like me or like you, like yeah, those people.
Can you tell people, just before we wrap up, tell people where they can find you, online, or
Oh,
do you have a
yeah.
social media profile or a website or an email address, or how do people contact you?
Yeah, so maybe I should just give you my email address, but
Yeah, we'll link to all
I'm
of that in the show
on. Oh,
notes,
thank
but
you.
just tell them if they're just listening in and they don't have time to look at it,
Yeah,
just spell it out for them.
if you type Mika Auslander on LinkedIn, I will be there. And I don't really use Facebook, but I still have Facebook account as well. And other social media, I have L Line. And yeah, I can't remember my Line ID, so I'll
That's
let you
okay.
know
Mika
later.
Auslander on LinkedIn. That works well,
Yeah,
right? Do you
yeah,
have an
yeah.
email address that you want to share as well?
Yeah, mika.osender@terrace.com.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you very, very much for your time, and
Yeah,
look
thank you
forward to
for having
continuing
me.
to working with you another 5 or 6 or 10 years.
Yeah. Excited for the future.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. So there you have it, the fabulous Mika Auslander, hands down one of the best bilingual foreigner-friendly realtors in the country, in my opinion, and I can definitely vouch for that one in person. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. Now, we can't let you go without telling you all about Yen Loans, our latest sponsor. They're a new non-bank lender offering financing to non-residents of Japan for purchases of Tokyo condominiums, soon to be expanding to other major cities as well, so definitely hit them up if you're looking to purchase in Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto, or any other big city too. And that's for any purpose, whether it's a holiday home, investment rental, or a combination of both, without any requirement for residency, a Japanese bank account, a Japanese corporate structure, or representative director, any of these things, and with a streamlined application process too. So reach out to them through the link in our show notes and let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And if you're quick enough to be one of the first 10 completed applications, you'll receive a 25% discount. That's 50,000 yen off the 200,000 yen application fee. To qualify, apply through the link in our show notes again, or enter the code JREYL on their website, yenloans.com. And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening, and we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd of course appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.